We welcome listeners back to the Poolside Pass Parent Podcast and episode 6 of series 2, bite-sized podcasts for parents and their swimmers.
We welcome our guest today, Kerri-Ann Payne. Hi, Kerri.
Hello.
Kerri-Ann is two-time world champion, gold medalist at the 10K open water at the World Championships 2009-2011. And silver medalist at the Beijing Olympics in 2008. That is quite a feat.
Thank you very much.
Before we begin our topic, just a quick word from our supporters, Streamlined. Become a qualified swimming teacher with Streamlined in as little as 6 days. Learn at your own pace and be guided by our expert tutors. You can do your training face-to-face, online in real time, or a combination. Assessment can be in your club, using videos or attending one of our assessment venues. We offer tailored, high-quality support. Quote the Poolside Pass for an extra 10% discount.
The main topic we want to talk today, really, Kerri-Ann, please, is about really becoming world champion in your drive to develop and empower sort of high-quality open water swimming, coaching qualifications, really, through your Straight Line Swimming company, which was created by yourself and your husband, who himself, I was reading, is also two-time gold medalist at the 2006 Commonwealth Games. So quite a family. Perhaps we can start really from your journey from pool to open water and just to sort of world champion.
Yeah. So my journey, I think quite often get that it's a bit of a different story to how people assume that most Olympians are. Everyone assumes that most Olympians are really competitive and they're really kind of firing. Anything we do is competition, and that when you retire, you really miss it. That's not really the case for me. I absolutely loved my career. It was a long one. It was a brilliant one. I did some amazing things, went to some amazing places, but I am very happy that I no longer have to get up at 5 a.m. and go training anymore. But my journey started as a youngster, and I was lucky, I guess, in a way that I had an older brother and sister who were both already swimming. My brother's 9 years older than me. So all I wanted to do was just basically to get his attention. And he was swimming, that's what he did. So I was like, that's what I'm gonna do as well. Little did I realize that actually I had an absolute love for swimming. So my mom made us do everything as kids. Not in a, you will do this, but in an everything. She made us try everything. We did gymnastics, we did ballet, we did hockey, we did cross country, we did swimming, we did running, we did absolutely any sport that you can imagine. She just wanted us to try everything so that we knew what it is that we wanted to do. Netball, water polo, diving, synchro, the works. Literally, we did everything. But I kept coming back to swimming, and that was the thing that I absolutely loved the most. And my brother was swimming still at the time as well. And when he got into his teens and I was kind of the age where, you know, I was like, oh, big brother, you're amazing. And he was like, oh, no way, kind of thing. But swimming was the one thing we really had in common. So it was the thing that I loved the most. And really, when I was a youngster, I was swimming for two reasons. One, because I loved it, and that's where my friends were. And two was because I was trying to impress my brother. I wasn't trying to impress anybody else other than him. So when I raced, I didn't care who I was racing against. It wasn't about that. It wasn't even about winning. It was about doing a really good performance. And that kind of kept going, and it kept going, and it kept going throughout my my career, if you like, from a youngster through to a teenager. I didn't have to try and, you know, win my brother's heart anymore, because I'd won it at that point, and he was fine, and he, you know, he did acknowledge my existence, which was great. We get on really well now, by the way. But you can imagine the difference in age was an interesting one. But the thing that really kind of made a difference was taking the realization that actually I was swimming for myself. And that's really when I realized that, kind of, I guess, when I got to about 16, 17, when things in the pool started to get a little bit tricky, and I realized I wasn't racing for myself anymore. I was racing to make teams, and I was racing to make the Olympic Games and the Commonwealth Games and to win medals. And that really was very different to how I had grown up. And I'd always grown up wanting to be the best version of myself. And all of a sudden, things changed around that age bracket. And then having the realization again that I needed to do something that I wanted to do. And that's when open water really became an opportunity for us. My coach at the time, Sean Kelly at Stockport Metro, he'd seen the opportunity that open water could bring. He knew my background of being born in South Africa and having done loads of open water swims there, would be a good base, a good background for me to try this new sport, which was going to be a new Olympic event. He didn't obviously phrase it like that to me. He just said, there's a great opportunity. You can go out to Australia and try a 10K. And I thought, that sounds like something I definitely want to do. And the alternative was to do a 400 medley in Sheffield. So I really kind of picked the best one, I think, in the moment anyway.
Yeah.
So I went out to Australia and again, just kind of fell back in love with something new. I must admit, and hopefully this doesn't put many people off, but I must admit the first few 10Ks I did, I was thinking, what are you doing? This is completely ridiculous. I'm racing for 2 hours. I'm doing 10K in the open water. All these girls are swimming all over the place. And I have some blue jellyfish. Oh, what? And it did take quite a few 10Ks down the line to really understand and really take and love the sport. But the things that really made a massive difference for me was my venues had completely changed from poolsides in Sheffield, in Manchester, in Stockport, even around the world, the same sort of types of poolsides, to incredible beaches in Hong Kong and to wonderful lakes in Seville and rivers and all that kind of stuff. Just, you know, some amazing places. And it really did open up a brand new world for me. And I really loved it. The people were different as well. They were because it was an emerging sport, everyone was still very friendly and kind of, you know, connecting. And I was so lucky that I had the opportunity to learn a lot of the skills that I did learn right from the beginning from a guy called Alan Bircher, who was our best open water swimmer at the time when we joined the world. He was super experienced. He'd done so many things. And I guess he took on the role of big brother, really, in a way, and just really taught me how to love it and how to enjoy it. And he introduced me to all the other countries and all the other people. And so it just became a really wonderful place. It totally reminded me of being a kid again, where I was just going swimming with my friends in the open water, getting a suntan, might have been up there somewhere. But it was just great. I really, really loved it. And like I said, when I made that transition, I really made a big effort again to try and focus on what worked for me and what was important to me. And it wasn't about going and winning medals. That was a byproduct of something else. For me, my career has always been about trying to be the best athlete that I could be. I never took any supplements. I only, you know, my diet was very much, all the food that I'd taken was very much fresh stuff. Food that I consumed myself. It wasn't about taking anything to aid my performance that way, because I was very strong and very kind of big on trying to make sure that I was the best athlete that I could be through the training I was doing, through the food that I was eating, and through the gym that I did, essentially. And that really set me up to kind of do that, to become world champion, double world champion, Olympic silver medalist, because it was about me doing what I could do, controlling what I could control to be the best athlete that I could be, and not worrying about the pressure people are putting on you or to worry about trying to win medals. It was about going and doing the performance that I'd been practicing and training for, and the outcome of that would be what it was going to be, whether that was to be world champion on the day or to be second or to be fourth or to be seventh. However my career kind of unfolded as you went through, it was about being the best athlete that I could be on that day.
I think to have that pure love and passion for the sport and be in that sort of that the character with which you sort of undertook those must have been, you know, fabulous looking back, saying, you know, I just love doing what I do.
Yeah, I really did. I love the training. Again, another thing I get asked all the time is, oh, I bet you're happy not to have to do those sessions anymore. Or what was your favorite session? And really, for me, my favorite sessions were the hard ones, as well as the easy ones. But they really were the ones that I felt were making me a better swimmer. So I knew that we had a set amount of sessions that we had to do a week that were going to be really hard. And I had to push myself in those sessions and do what the coaches were asking of me, because ultimately, that was going to make me a better swimmer. That session had its place within the whole program that I was doing. And, you know, so every session was a contribution towards that kind of end goal, which was me being the best version of myself. It wasn't about, oh, I can't be bothered doing this session today. I really can't be bothered. Or why are we doing this one? I'm going to do it next week again. I knew the purpose of every session and every part that every session played within that goal. It was about, you know, this is this part, this is this part. And there were some sessions which I'm sure if Sean listens to this, he will probably go, you definitely didn't enjoy those sessions. And there definitely were a few that I just couldn't quite get my head around, which was on a Friday morning. We had to just do 5K straight. And that was really, and I was the only one, myself and Cassie Patton, my training partner at the time, we both had to basically just do this 5K session. And that was, you know, our way of recovering, of getting ready for the 10K, because it was half of our swim. We could do all of that. All the other people in the squad were basically doing, I'd say, basically nothing on a Friday morning. I'm sure they would say something slightly different, being the only two distance swimmers in a whole squad of people. But it was, I couldn't quite get my head around that. And it wasn't until, and he's probably going to kill me for saying this, but it wasn't until I moved on to my next coach, to Laurel Bailey, when I went to Edinburgh for the last 4 years, that I took a bit more control over my training and my performance and what I was doing, which was quite a breath of fresh air for me at the time, because I was 24 years old. Things needed to change slightly. I wasn't, you know, the 15, 16 year old girl anymore. I needed to train smarter, essentially. So I took a bit more control over that, which was through my coach Laurel's and kind of persistence, if you like, because I was very happy to just go and she could tell me what I needed to do, but she was very big on me taking control of my performance. Anyway, that's probably for another story. But one of the things that I did see when I looked at the program, I thought, you know what, I really need to do some really long swims, because that's going to give me the confidence knowing that I can do the distance no question and my technique can be good for 9, 10, 11K. Doing that. So what we would do essentially on a Friday morning, it was short course instead of long course this time, I would start a 4 week block and it would be 9, 10, or 8, 9, 10, 11K. And that's what I would do. So I would do 11K up to 11K short course on a Friday morning, nonstop. But actually I quite enjoyed those sessions in the end, because I was the one that had taken the, you know, I'd saw the benefit, the value. Initiative. Yeah, and I'd taken the initiative, and it wasn't something I felt like I was forced to do. I really did genuinely see the benefit in it. And as I got older, I realized that the best way that I recovered was just by doing long, continuous, easy swimming. And so really, that session served a big purpose. It also, to be honest, it added to my resilience, knowing that I was doing 11K short course nonstop, while all the other swimmers, it wasn't any different. All the other swimmers in the squad were all sprinters, and they basically did nothing. But I basically had to, you know, do so. It definitely added to my resilience, as well as adding to my overall performance, my recovery, and all that kind of stuff. So it did have some really big benefits. But for me, all those sessions added to this end goal, which wasn't to win an Olympic gold medal for me. That was a dream. Difference between goals and dreams. And my goal was to be the best version of myself, with a dream of, you know, representing my country and standing on a podium if I was able to do that.
That's a lovely sort of attribute to have. And I think all of those sort of those endurance swims, obviously your technique for those swims has to be so constant for that period of time. I suppose when you know, for you, when you decided enough was enough, and did you think, with the technique that you'd created and how you'd done it, that was, you knew at that point you were going to try and create, you know, something like straight line swimming methodology? Or how did that sort of come about from finishing at the highest level?
It came about very, not quite in that way, actually. It came about that I knew Rio was going to be my last Olympic Games. I knew I wasn't going to be able to push my body any further. And I was ready to take on something new. I really did feel that, you know, I'd say that about 3 months before the Rio Olympic Games, I was driving to training one morning and I just wait to not have to do this again. And I was like, whoa, I had never really said that before, ever, but I could feel that it was coming, and I knew my time was coming mentally, physically, and all that kind of stuff. And I had a great career, and I'd already chosen this was going to be my last one. But what I didn't want to do was what I'd seen a lot of other friends had done, which was to end swimming and go, right, okay, what am I going to do now? And I didn't go to university. I didn't feel like I could give my time to swimming and to education at the same time. So I chose swimming and thought I could do education until I was 90, but I can't swim, you know, at this level until I'm 90. I'm sure I can swim to a level until I'm 90, but it was just a decision I made. My family supported me, they backed me. And I just didn't want to stop really just having nothing to step into. So at least a year in advance of me retiring, myself and my husband David, so he retired after the London Olympic Games and he went into the corporate world. And he used to travel a lot with pool swimming stuff that he used to do, and we used to travel together on training camps, and we just hadn't seen each other as much. So we thought, you know, what if we could create something that meant that we could spend time together, we could travel the world, and we could help people swimming. And that's essentially where my first business, which is Triscape that you're talking about, my coaching business came about. And really it was about taking people on some amazing holidays around the world and making sure they had a holiday, but also improving their technique along the way and inspiring them to take on any swimming challenge that they had. So that's what it was about, really. And open water was always going to be an element to that, but we'd always start in the pool first. And then through that journey, so certainly through that first 2 years, what we noticed when we were coaching people or taking people into the water, there was quite a lot of common mistakes that a lot of people were making. And when we'd said, you know, this is the mistake you're making, they would go, well, that's how I was taught how to swim. That's how I've been swimming my whole life. And we thought, right, okay. So what we did was, how can we really help people with this now? We need to make a difference. We need to help people. The corporate world that my husband had stepped into was business coaching, executive leadership teams. So he'd come at it from a really coaching perspective in the true sense of the word, asking questions, going on guided journeys. You know, how can we help empower people in order to do these things? And we thought that's kind of really when we looked at our strokes and said, right, what is it that we do individually, reverse engineered our strokes to go, what is it that we do that make us efficient swimmers? Are there similarities between the two of us? Because we swim quite differently, but are there some similarities? And we noticed that there were a couple. And then we looked across some of the best swimmers in the world, the Becky Adlingtons, the Michael Phelpses, the Ryan Lochtes, the, you know, some of the incredible swimmers, not just on the freestyle side of things, but on all of the other strokes, and actually realized that there were similarities between everyone's stroke is slightly different. And that was one thing, one big realization, that everyone swims slightly differently. So to try and swim like Rebecca Adlington, I'm sorry to say, it's not going to be possible unless you're Rebecca Adlington. The same with Michael Phelps. The only person that can swim like Michael Phelps is Michael Phelps. However, what Becky and what Michael were doing, the fundamentals of their strokes were the same. Essentially, they had the same criteria for what they were doing. And we realized that there was three things, really. And it wasn't just three things, but it was the order that the three things needed to be done. Now, the first fundamental that really is important is breathing. It's incredibly important, breathing. And it's amazing how many people don't focus on it. And I'm not talking about bilateral breathing one way or breathing the other way. And this golden rule that apparently everyone has to be able to bilateral breathe, I can tell you is not true. It has got to be something that feels comfortable to you. If you can breathe both ways, great. If you can only breathe one way and you feel faster, that's because you are. Again, if you look across the best swimmers in the world, most of them will be breathing one way. Anyway, that's a separate story. Yeah. Is that a lot of people are don't focus on breathing, and a lot of people are overbreathing, breathing too much, especially with adults that are getting into swimming, that it's like they're doing a completely different thing, and they breathe very differently in the water, hyperventilate themselves, breathing in too much, breathing out too much, all that kind of stuff. So breathing is the number one thing for us, and we don't move on into that until someone really understands what we're talking about and we get them to do some drills and exercises. And then we work on someone's body position in the water and how important your body position is in helping you become a more efficient swimmer. And really it was these first two things that we noticed, that the way that swimming teaching was taught a long time ago, it really, swimming has moved on quite a lot, but some of those teaching mechanisms haven't quite moved on, or people were taught how to do certain things. As an example, thumb entry first, which was taught alongside the S-pull. Now, that's what moving on to the third thing, which is propulsion in your arms and legs. But we know now that that is causing a lot of injuries in a lot of swimmers, with rotator cuff injuries, because, you know, you're internally rotating your shoulder into the front. So your thumb, by your thumb entering first, putting the pressure of the water on top of that, which is about 800 times more dense than air. And what it does is it's causing that the ball and socket joint to rub, which causes impingements. So what we're starting to see is that, you know, people are starting to change things. The way that swimming teaching is done now is slightly different, and all that sort of stuff. So really what we noticed with our Triscape side of things and the coaching we were doing was that this new way of coaching, it wasn't just about the way that the things that we were delivering, but the way that we did it in a coaching approach, empowering people to make up their minds and what makes them feel better. How does that feel? Do you feel more efficient? And that made a massive difference. And that's really where straight line swimming, the methodology, was born. And that's what our fundamentals are. So breathing, first of all, then onto body position, and then onto propulsion, onto your arms and legs and what they do. And then from there, really, I just had a great opportunity to meet up with Dave Candler, who's the CEO of the STA, the Swimming Teachers Association. And they were at the time working on an open water coaching qualification. And they were looking for people to join the working group to create the qualification. And I was looking for someone to help us to certify straight line swimming, essentially, because the methodology had worked for us. I've coached over 2,000 people over the last 4 years, 5 years, how to swim, and it's had incredible results across all those people. So I was looking for someone to help me with that, and they were looking for someone to help them with a qualification. And that's really where the business, if you like, now that is what is straight line swimming, was really born from, was creating the qualification. And the methodology that we use is the methodology used within the coaching qualification as well for the front crawl side of things.
And the level two open water qualification, obviously that can be done, obviously at the moment in lockdown, obviously online. But obviously, you know, coming out of lockdown, hopefully, obviously on more face to face, and obviously you've got the CPDs as well to continuing professional development.
Yeah, so what happened then was that the STA were really happy for us to create these CPDs, these continual personal development courses based around our swimming methodology. So we'd have three CPDs, or there's one that's all three of them together. Now, they're very much from a swimming teacher, swimming coaching perspective, but I'm a big believer in that if you are going to learn how to do a skill, the best thing to do is to try and coach yourself through it. So they helped us to create those, and that they kind of sit on the STA website. And then what we did with that was, so I said to the STA, I would love to join you on your qualification, but I need to be comfortable with everything that's within it. And I want to be part of it. And I want to make sure if you're going to be using my name and my image, that it's really good. I'm not just going to stick my name to anything, even if it's anything open water. And they were delighted and said, yeah, absolutely. Let's do this. I don't think they were expecting me to get quite as involved as I did get involved. And, you know, I kind of looked at the qualification and thought, we really, really need to start again from all the stuff I'd learned over the last, you know, coaching 2,000 people and all the skills that I'd acquired through my years of racing open water. A lot of people didn't know the most efficient way of doing things and the way to do things. And actually, even within our sport of open water swimming, and some of the best swimmers in the world are just muddling themselves along. No one really teaches these skills. It's just something that you learn and you try and hone yourself along the way. So I really got stuck in, and all the open water skills, the technique, the front crawl technique side of things, and all the coaching side of things of the manual and of the qualification had essentially come from myself and from David. So they really weren't expecting me, I think, to get quite as involved as I did, but I'm really delighted that I did, because I, not just that stuff, but the rest of it, the safety stuff and the way that they've created the qualification and how we've done it, the prerequisites that we have. So we decided experience in the open water was a huge part of why people are wanting to get more people into the open water. A lot of people aren't getting into open water because they want to coach kids how to learn how to swim. They want to help adults get into the open water to enjoy it as much as they do. So we decided that you didn't need a pre-qualification in order to join us. There's an online upskill that people can do to have the same knowledge, at level of base knowledge that swimming teachers would have. But experience is a huge part. And if you haven't had open water experience, then we've said you can't do the qualification until you've had that experience. So we either ask for a letter of recommendation from someone, or we get a screenshot, if you like, of an event that someone's done, like an open water swim that someone's done. And for us, that's a really important part of it. So having kind of then created those two things and then becoming a tutor of that. And I thought that I absolutely loved coaching. I do really love it. I love inspiring people and seeing their faces when they figure out for themselves what they're supposed to be doing. They go, oh, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And oh, it feels so much easier now. And I was like, that's exactly what we're aiming for. It's not meant to feel hard unless you're pushing yourself. But I cannot tell you how much I've loved tutoring the qualification. I genuinely cannot even put into words how proud I am of what we've managed to do. So pre this year, I'd qualified about 125 coaches. And the way the course runs is it's a three-day course. It's a mixture of classroom-based, practical experience in the water and all that kind of stuff. And you get qualified within that portfolio to fill out. And I mark that risk assessments, all that kind of stuff, the important stuff there. But then this year, through lockdown, we worked really well, really hard with the STA and Ofqual and all the people involved with qualification to check if we could make it slightly virtual, essentially. So what we started to do was to run 2 days of Zoom classroom work, essentially, so to do all the classroom work within 2 days. And then when we could do that third kind of practical element in 1 day. So we break that up into three parts. So we still get to see them deliver three coach type sessions, but only one of them in the water, two of them land-based exercises. And what we managed to do was open up this new industry and this new opportunity for people who, a lot of them were swimming teachers who basically had no income coming in, and they fell through the cracks of the help with the government because they were self-employed, and they were looking to take on something new like open water swimming. Through the summer, I was supposed to call it the summer qualification process, which started at the end of beginning of April and ended at the beginning of October, really, qualified. So not even just in the 2 day Zoom, but the third practical day, we managed to get through them in the summer. I qualified 110 coaches this year. So considering in the previous 2 years, I'd only got to 125 in 2 years, I did 110. But what we then again spoke to the STA and said, can we continue to run this through the winter? Because what we tend to get in April when the season starts is that I can only run so many courses in April, but so many people want to be ready to take the season on. And so what they said we could do is essentially run a course a month between now and April and run the practical sessions in April. And the course that I'm running next week, which is again more of a virtual one, is already full. It was oversubscribed, so we had to start turning people away to the December course. So we've got a course in November, December, January, February, March, and then we'll be running the practicals in April to qualify all the through the winter. Wow. Which is just amazing. It's certainly not something I had expected to happen, if you like. As in, I knew that people wanted to do the qualification, but we hadn't expected this many people. And we've had absolutely everyone you can imagine, triathlon coaches, a lot of people who just absolutely love open water swimming, and they've helped a couple of their friends, and they just wanted to know more themselves, but they wanted to make sure that they had all the safety element in place with their friends because they felt like it was something that they needed to do, which it is something that they need to do. So if that sounds like you, definitely come along, because we will make sure that you know exactly what you need to put in place from a safety perspective, even if you're taking friends along. Because the hard part with swimming is that there's a bunch of legislation, not just with swimming, with any sport really, there's a bunch of legislation that needs to take into consideration. And if you're taking someone out into the open water, you automatically become they become your duty of care, essentially, whether it's paid for or not, whether it's a friend thing or not. So that's what we've had a lot of people come across that way. Lots of swimming clubs, actually, who are wanting to add an open water element to what they do, realizing that there is a pocket of swimmers within their club who just love swimming, but not, they don't see the same opportunities in the pool as they do in the open water. So lots of clubs have come to us and asked to help us to create that open water element to their club already, which is helping the clubs because it's retaining lots of their swimmers, but helping them do a new sport that they really love doing, which requires training in the pool as well. And then, just lots of people who are just desperate to change their careers. And we've definitely helped out someone go from a corporate pharmaceutical job to running their own endless pool training center in Northampton. And he's just changed his whole life. Absolutely loves it.
Wow. But what a feeling you must have, you know, taking these people on this, well, vertical journey from one career to a completely different career that you're so passionate about and are empowering.
Yeah, I really do love it. I really love it. And that kind of led me on to, you briefly talked about earlier, the Global Open Water Coaches Conference that I put on, because I knew that a lot of the coaches I already had from the previous 2 years and the ones that I was coaching this year were starting to really worry about COVID and how it was working. And I could see they were getting a bit anxious because I have a Facebook group, a support group for all those coaches, and they were getting anxious and worried about things. So I thought what we need to do is to create something to really help them figure out what it is that they can do in order to be ready and prepared. So risk assessment, safety, cold water swimming side of things, understanding the industry a little bit more, making swimming a bit more diverse. So I called out and reached out to a bunch of friends and to people who I was really interested to hear from, and we created the conference. And we did it via Zoom because I wanted the speakers to see faces, not to do a webinar where you can't, you just kind of fingers crossed, hope that people are there listening. And it went incredibly well. So what we're working on now with Straight Line Swimming is to kind of take that on even further and creating a platform within our Straight Line Swimming website, which will be, there'll be a couple of different things within there. Fingers crossed, I'm going to say it out loud now, and it's not been done yet, but fingers crossed now that I've said it has to work, we'll have a coach finder as well. So somewhere where swimmers, that someone's looking for an open water coach, they'll be able to find an open water coach, hopefully in their area, but someone close to them, because I've coached all the way from Scotland all the way down to Penzance, literally country and island everywhere. Even in Switzerland, if you live in Switzerland, there's a couple of coaches out there. Yeah. Dubai, like Hong Kong, there's someone come over from Hong Kong to do it. Wow. So that coaching element is part of it. But then there's this expert talk, this learning, this knowledge, and CPDs, there'll be a load more CPDs on there as well. So creating this platform for coaches to really to learn more, to hear from some experts like Jamie Monaghan, who, if you know anything about cold water swimming, she is the queen of cold water swimming and swam in the Arctic. She swam around Manhattan 4 times. Like, she's got incredible records. Really excited to speak to all these amazing people and in a similar sort of setting of Zoom where people can ask questions and they can see and stuff. So that's kind of what I've been working on at the moment. And I'm really excited about that part of it as well. So just creating more for these guys to really learn and to improve and to empower. My mission really with Straight Line Swimming is to empower the world to swim outdoors, and these coaches are helping me to do that.
Well, I think you seem to have already reached such a high level already, and as you say, you know, COVID has grown that exponentially and given you that opportunity to grow it in so many ways in the amount of coaches that you've managed to already qualify this year. So,
yeah.
And in 2021, just quickly before we finish, TriScape and your hopes for TriScape in 2021 and beyond?
Yeah, so TriScape, as with many travel companies and coaching companies, had to take a bit of a backseat this year, which was okay because we were so busy with the qualifications. But I'm really excited for next year. We've got 3 retreats, hopefully, that they can all kind of come across. So what we do, as I said earlier, is to take people to really wonderful locations around the world. So they can have a holiday, but also learn how to become more efficient swimmers at the same time. So in March/April time, we're hoping to go back out to Nevis, which is one of the Caribbean islands attached to St. Kitts and Nevis. And that'll be a week retreat with a swim from one island to the other. That usually happens every year, which is really exciting. And then in October time, I'm hoping to go out to Tresco to do an introduction to cold water swimming out there as well, on just an incredible island in the Isles of Scilly. And then back in to November, which is where I should have been right now, was out in St. Lucia at the Body Holiday running our 2 weeks swim fit retreat and some adventure that we'd normally have out there. But this year just didn't quite work out for us to go out there. So I'm hoping that will happen. I'm hoping we'll be able to create more masterclasses. Like, another thing I do with TriScape is I deliver masterclasses to swimming clubs, to triathlon clubs, to open water clubs, anyone that's really interested in learning some methodology, which I can do in an hour, essentially. It's a 3-hour process, but we do it at least an hour and a half in the water of actually the practical experience. And then some one-to-one coaching again, which I do enjoy and I do actually miss. I've just had no chance and pools and all that kind of stuff to try and figure out how we get involved and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, that's what hopefully will be for TriScape.
It sounds like you haven't got a minute to spare and
not many.
All these different balls that you're juggling in the air.
Indeed. Yeah, it is definitely a balancing act, but it's one that, you know, they definitely complement each other, so it is easy for me to try and figure out how the next month, the next couple of years should kind of work out.
Yeah, and they all seamlessly knit together.
Yeah.
Well, Kerri-Anne, that was an incredible insight into your journey from world champion to leading and inspiring the world to swim outdoors. And thank you so much for your time today. It's really, really appreciated and sharing your goals, your aspirations, and and your drive to get the world to swim outdoors. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I love talking about it. So, thanks very much for letting me talk.
Thank you.